Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not.
As you may guess it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show.
So you mentioned partly, I was going to ask you, how was growing up in the Kingdom Hall? So you mentioned partly how you were looked down upon, as I also noticed when I was in the Kingdom Hall, they do that to each other. So were you not allowed to make friends either because of that? Did you have any Jehovah's Witness friends in the hall?
Not really, because there was only a few of them that were my age. And they just really didn't associate with me because my father wasn't a full witness.
Right. And as similar situation, before I got baptized, I had friends within the hall, of course, because it was pre-cell phone. And so I could only meet them in hall or when there's a party or when there's a gathering in the weekend for barbecue. But after I got baptized, I was not allowed to make any friends unless they were baptized or they were the elders' children. And especially when I was getting some privileges, I felt very alone, even when I was friends with the elders' children, because as you say, it's all pointing fingers. You have to walk like this and all of us are like that. And how can you really make a friendship? Because in my definition of friendships is someone who actually knows who you are, your hurt, someone who's there for you and they know you and you can talk to them about anything. And there's not really friendships, because once you do something that out of line, or even if it's not out of line, if it's odd, they're just going to tell on you. And what kind of friendship is that? So interestingly, till this day, I keep a lot of, not a religious thing, but a lot of Jehovah's Witness stuff. Till this day, it's been hard for me to make friends. And sometimes I feel bad for myself and wonder if it could be different. But a lot of times, I would say 90% of the times, I feel great about it. But sometimes in the summer, when I see people hanging out with friends and I'm all alone, and sometimes I wonder, how is it to have friends to hang out with? And yeah, so it's...
Do you feel like it's a trust issue? Because that's what it's for me. Like, I don't trust, because I felt being a witness, you know, their friendship or their love was like it had strings attached.
Condition, right.
Yeah, it was, everything had conditions. So I didn't trust new people. So it's really like I have a, you know, I do have a few friends, but I could count on one hand, half a hand, how many real friends who I consider my friends. But it's a long time because I didn't, I was thinking like, well, they're going to judge me. You know, they're going to tell me, or they're going to hold it. They're going to hold my past against me.
Right. Exactly. It could be a trust thing. Let's see here. I haven't really thought about it too deeply. And I think it's something that I'm avoiding to find the answer. And I think in this journey of the podcast, and as of last year, I'm done with bullshitting myself. So I'm in the journey of discovering who I really am in my trauma deep down. And so,
yeah. You have plenty of time to figure it out. You're still young.
So I think it's just, what's that word? I want to say a tradition. I think it's just muscle memory of not being allowed to have friends and not being able to make friends, even if I could make someone my friend. So as I become an adult, I still kept that. I think that's what it is. Or maybe if I unpack it, I can find the real reason. But I'll tell you this much. After I left, I joined a group for youth. I met someone who's become my adoptive brother in a subway. And we talked because I used to hang out a lot in Harvard Yard because I'm from Boston and I live close to there in Somerville. So I used to hang out in the Harvard school a lot. So he was a professor. So he thought I was a student there. So we started talking, we became friends and he became my mentor. And so he told me of the youth place to go. So I've gone there and I made friends there. And what I've noticed is, I guess it's a thing in life and everywhere, that a lot of people, in order for them to be your friend, you have to have the same beliefs. And if you don't, there might be fights or they might not be your friend, or you have to basically wear a mask through different people or a group of people. I don't think I wore a mask as a Jehovah's Witness because I was really into it. And that's why I did not stay being Jehovah's Witness. So the minute that I, okay, so what happened is when I left Jehovah's Witness, I left my parents' house and I was still Jehovah's Witness. And the person who helped me moved, we had sex months later. And then when that happened, even that week of, I said, I'm done for. This is a no going back kind of a thing. So why BS myself going back and wear a mask? So I just changed my number and never went back. So, because that's my personality. If I'm going to do something, I'm just going to do it. So when I was wearing a mask outside of being Jehovah's Witness to make friends with people, because I grew up Jehovah's Witness and I don't know how to live in the world and being around worldly people, I had to wear a mask. And when people were liking my mask and not me, I felt alone and useless. I was like, who am I? And I know who I wanted to be for these people and they loved it. So the minute I removed my mask and I was me, most people were gone. And since then I haven't worn that mask since. And I think that's part of the reason that I can unpack why I still don't have friends that I hang out with. And of course I have friends in one hand, I know their names and I can text them and they answer right away. I can call them and I know whatever, but those are what I call real friends. I don't call just anybody my friend. You either my friend or you're not, or you're just an acquaintance, someone you work with, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe that came from being Jehovah's Witness, or maybe that's a life thing, I'm not sure. But it's very interesting. I don't regret that, not regret. I don't regret my past because it makes me who I am today, kind of a thing. So what were your thoughts about being Jehovah's Witness when you were a member? I'm asking that question because when I was there, I was a robot. So did you actually have thoughts of yourself? Were you a robot too, or were you an individual?
Oh no, we were robots. It was like, don't ask questions, do as you're told. And if we did ask questions, it was like, why are you asking that? You know, you grew up in this religion, you should know this kind of thing. So we just did what we were told because we didn't want to get hit. We didn't want to get abused mentally or physically from my mother. So mm-hmm. we were robots. We did what we were told. We went door to door. Oh, I hate it. Oh my gosh. I hated going door to door. We were forced to go door to door. We did everything that we were supposed to do. We became unbaptized publishers. You know, we did go talk to the elders about being baptized. I don't know why, for some reason, they didn't allow me or my sister. But my brother was said he was never baptized, but I don't know if he was an unbaptized publisher. But I felt like we were robots, like just go on with the flow. And it's kind of funny, I still kind of know my Bible to this day, you know, because we were forced to memorize that. It was like, you know, you better raise your hand at meetings and a Bible study, you better raise your hand.
Right. Yeah.
And you better answer correctly and you better not be playing around.
Right. So what are your thoughts now since you're no longer a member?
About the religion or about?
Yeah. About the religion.
That's a hard question because I think there's some very good people in the religion and some not so very great people in the religion as well. There's bits and pieces I actually still believe to this day. I'm not a practicing member. I have not stepped foot in a congregation probably since I was in my 20s. I'm in my 40s. My mom does invite us every year to the Passover. Is that what they call it? Wait, the Memorial. Sorry.
Yes.
I had to remember what it's called. Memorial.
Yes, mom, same here. It's their duty.
She did invite me this year. I don't think last year she invited me because she was like, well, it's on Zoom, blah blah blah. And my daughter even asked me, she's like, mom, you know, mom, grandma wants me to come over and watch it. And I said, it is not like your other grandma's church because they're Baptist, you know. And I said, it's not like that, you know, because I've been to that church and they're singing in the aisle. My daughter is mixed, so she's African, half African American. So they go to a Black Baptist church and they're singing in the aisle. And I love it. I think it's great. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know church could be fun. So I'm like, why are they dancing in the aisle? Like, I was like, what's going on?
I would just love to go. I haven't gone since, but I would love to.
Yeah, and because Jehovah's Witness is that, you know, you sit still and it's monotone and you just
boring.
Yeah. And then it used to be 2 hours long. Now I heard it's no. My brother told me because he had tried going back a couple years ago. I think about up until when COVID almost started, he stopped going because he had started to go back again. Uh-huh. So he said, oh, it's not that long anymore. It's not those 2 hours. He said, yeah, now it's like an hour and 15 minutes. I'm like, oh, okay.
That's so quick.
Yeah, I'm like, really? It's very hard because I hate to say this. I think it's a cult. I really think it's a cult because the witness and how we were raised, well, how I was raised, it has messed up it's messed me up in many ways. But, you know, I went to therapy. And then therapy is actually looked down on. And the witness is, you're not supposed to go and get help. It took me a lot. And like I said, I forgave my mother. I forgave my father. It took me a lot of, you know, self-reflection. And, you know, right now, I'm not gonna lie, I'm in therapy now because, you know, of course, my father's passing. But I do think it's a cult. It is a cult. It is a true cult. But like I said, there's some very good people that are in that religion and some not so good people. I think number one, I hate to say this, but I think it's the number one religion in the world.
More than the priesthood of the Catholic, you think?
I think it's up there. I think they're neck and neck.
It's up there. They're competing, probably.
Yeah, they are competing.
Yeah, sadly, yeah. And when that was happening, I even 20 years ago, I remember that. Well, just speaking truth, I'm not bad mouthing anyone, and I'm not saying her name. But my mother, you know that Bible verse that talks about the tongue, how the tongue can kill or something, something. I don't remember exactly the verse. She had that tongue. She would say the meanest things that could cut you so deep. And I remember when that pedophile thing happened, I was looking up. I had an elder. He took me under his wings, and he never did any abuse toward me. And he was giving me privileges, and I was baptized, and I believed, and I was zealous, and I was preaching with him, and I was doing a lot of things, even more than his children. His children were younger, probably like 3 or 4 years, maybe. And my mom would say the most terrible things. And I guess it's good. I guess, you know, truthfully, I don't feel like she was asking me genuinely, hey, are you safe? Whatever. She would just make comments and gossips just to wild things up or bring the heat, and saying how, oh, maybe this elder, this and that and that. And then when I was mentioning how I wanted to live with some other Jehovah's Witnesses, and then she would tell my dad, oh, don't be alone with him, because he might say you did things to him and things like that. And I'm like, where are you getting this from? And I do a lot of self-help as a grown up, and in my self-help discoveries of about me, because when you start learning about yourself, you have to go through a childhood. And I have diagnosed my mother, and I think she was bipolar, and she had BPD and narcissist personality.
That is my mom.
And I might be correct, I may not be not, but because of my experiences and now studying psychology and looking, basically figuring myself out and where my trauma is coming from, and it keeps going to her. And of course, again, I'm not shaming her or judging her, it's just talking about the experience, seeing what my truth is and where things came from. And yeah, so when the abuse were starting, I was very shocked because that didn't happen to me. But then later when I spoke to my sister, and she told me that happened to her by elders, and my older sisters also came forward and talked in the family, but they said to never talk about it outside of the family. And I was pretty shocked. I think that's when that thing called Lamb, Silence Lamb, was it? Not Silence of the Lamb, something Lamb.
Yeah, it was, I think it was an Awake that came out about, I can't remember exactly what it was called, but I'm there with your sisters, because I was actually sexually assaulted from two of the elders' sons, and they did nothing. They slept it under the rug. The first question she asked me was, what were you doing with them? Not like, are you okay? Do we need to go to the police? Like nothing. Like, and it's kind of funny because me and my mom had two different personalities, because like, I remember my daughter got sexually harassed. Now she wasn't assaulted, but she was harassed at work, and she told me, and I'm like, who was it? You tell me who they are. Was it someone who worked there? You know, because we'll report them to HR. You know, I'm here like going down the list what we can do. But the first thing my mom did was like, what were you doing with those boys? Mm-hmm. What were you wearing?
Right.
And it was a lot of victim shaming. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they go by the two witness rule.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. So nobody believed me.
Right.
And the funny thing is, I guess it's not funny, but many, many years later, that one of those elder kids was convicted of many years later, many, many years, probably like 10 years after that.
Well, that makes sense, because if you do it, you're not what's that word? If you're not rehabilitated, it's something you that's going to be part of you and you're going to be doing. So that totally makes sense because no one confronted him about it or was allowed to. So he was allowed to continue doing what he does in secret.
Yeah, I was like, boys will be boys. You know, you must have did something. You must have said something, you know, to, because it was two brothers. You know, they were real brothers. You know, they were elder kids. And it was, you know, I had no, you know, the first thing I did was tell my mother and I said, I want to talk to the elders. And of course, nobody believed me. Nobody went to the police. Nobody did nothing. You know, for a long time, I was very mad at my mother for not believing me, for not taking me seriously. And to me, that's why I say, like, it's, you know, part of that even messed me up in the head because I didn't know which man I could trust, which man I, you know, was a.
Right. And unfortunately, I think if the world was reversed, they would still blame you and they would believe them and not you. And I think it's the sexism thing where if you actually were what they call Jezebel of the Bathsheba, and then they would say, why are you after those boys? And then they would believe them and not you. So regardless, I think because, yeah, and it's terrible. I've seen lately in those groups, there's a lot of things going on with the abuse. And I wonder, I watched a video how they said they have maybe a thousands of cases or more that no one's doing anything about. And I think the Supreme Court or some court is FBI is asking for, what's that word? Forcing them to show who did it and all these people, right? So how do you feel about being disassociated from the religion? Like because you were saying how there's some stuff you still believe, like would you ever want to go back if things are
different? No way. Okay. I would never go back. I would never set foot in there.
So what do you believe? Is it like principles that you still, because there's some principles that I still do.
Correct. There are principles.
Yeah.
There's principles I believe. But there's some things that I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, like I don't believe, like, I don't think it's, even though I don't celebrate my birthday, I don't think it's wrong to celebrate birthdays.
Right.
You know, there's principles behind other beliefs, like, you know, there's some of the Ten Commandments. Okay, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery. You know, there's just some of those things that, you know, we shouldn't, you know.
I think it's a human thing. I don't think the Bible needed to say, don't murder your neighbor for anyone not to murder their neighbor, right? It's like, it's a human thing. Or don't sleep with your father's wife. Like, I think most people know not to do that.
Yeah, so it's just some of those beliefs. And the one thing that I do like their conviction. I do like that, you know, they have strong conviction. That's the one thing I like always to talk when people are like, what's the one thing, if you can say one good thing about your mother, I'm like, she has convictions. She believes. Now, does she practice what she believes? No, but she believes. She'll say, like, you know, she'll say underhand comments to sometimes to me, you know, like, oh, well, no. And then when I mention Jehovah, it's like, oh, who are you? Well, you can't talk about Jehovah. You're not a witness. I'm like, I can sure talk about Jehovah all day long. You know,
Right. Right. So do you still talk to her?
Yes and no, because my parents were married up until the day my dad died. My mom was very angry that my dad wanted me and my daughter to have the house that he lived in. So my mom, you know, I'm the one that took, like, I never once have wanted like a pat on the back, like, oh, good for you. You did, you know, I cared for my dad out of love. But if you were to ask my mom, I did it for money.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. But my dad didn't leave me any money. You know, my dad left all the money to my mom, which was rightfully hers. All he wanted to do was leave me the house and my daughter the house. And my siblings, actually, I couldn't even believe it. I was so shocked that my siblings were like, no, you deserve it. You took care of dad. You did this, you did that. The last week of his life, my mom was just so evil to me. You know, my dad was on his deathbed. He was on oxygen. He couldn't, you know, up into his last 2 weeks, he was pretty active. He was still doing yard work. He was doing all kinds of stuff. He wasn't acting the same. So I knew he was kind of deteriorating. His last week of his life, my mom just like pointed fingers and like, you're doing this for money, 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 money. Like, no, I'm not doing it for money. I'm doing it for love. So right now, the only reason I talk to my mother, because she is kind of fighting what my dad's wishes are. Because she does not think that I deserve, she literally told me, and this is my dad was still alive. She literally told me, I do not deserve the house.
Did she ever live in there? Mm-hmm. Oh, she lives in there now.
No, she doesn't live here. It's just me and my daughter. So this is the house that my parents bought when they got married. So when my mom moved out, you know, she went and got, like, my dad helped her get her own house. So she had her own house. So she has a house, okay. like literally like 3 miles from here.
Why so, she needs a house?
Because I have bills. Cindy, I was just so. Oh.
Yeah.
The number one thing was like, Cindy, she was going on and on how she had been sick last year and that nobody helped her, nobody called her. And I'm like, Mom, you didn't tell any of us. You didn't call us, you didn't text us. Well, you should have known. I'm like, Mom, we're not mind readers. Like, but she's like, well, you should have known. You should have. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you know. And she's like, I just think it's, you know, you kids just turn your back on me and don't. And I'm like, Mom, we're not witnesses. I'm like, and she got mad at me because I told her, I said, Mom, you know, when resurrection comes, we're not going to be there. You're going to have to figure out things in yourself. And she did not like when I told her that, because I was like, I'm not being resurrected. So she didn't like that. And I said, you never reached out. And it was like, woe is me, woe is me, woe is me. And I had to be very careful because my dad was literally on his deathbed, you know, hooked up to oxygen on the last leg of his life. The day that my dad died, she was actually the last person I called. I called my siblings first. I called his sisters, his brother. I called everybody else except for my mom. She was my last person to call. And the day that my dad died, I asked her, can I stay here? And she's like, I don't know how to think about that. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, Mom, you need to make a decision, you know? And she's like, well, I feel like you guys are asking for money. And I said, who asked for money? And she's like, well, you guys. I said, Anthony, who's my brother, didn't ask for money. Janelle didn't ask for money, who's my sister. Nobody asked for money because my siblings have not talked to her. They talked to me to have me talk to her. So I'm like, nobody's asking for money. Now, if I happen to get the house, I'm supposed to give my siblings money. But right now my hands are kind of tied, so I can't give my siblings any money. So right now it's like I'm doing things to appease her. So there's things that I've done that my siblings are like, why are you doing this? For example, I paid her car insurance for the next 6 months. And my son was like, why did you do that? I said, because dad would have did it. And I don't want her to hold over the head like, oh, well, you didn't help me. I need to help. I told you I need to help. I'm behind on bills because I was sick, blah, blah, blah. But sometimes I don't want to help my mom because she's like, oh, you just want to help me so you can get the house. It's just round and round we go.
No matter where you see your doom.
So like my sibling, and then of course, I'm still getting bills for my dad. little bills. They're not anything crazy. I went ahead and paid them. My son was like, why are you paying them? Make mom pay them. I said, no, I promised that I would do it. And they're like, but Cindy, you paid for the funeral, but you paid for his cremation. You paid for his tombstone. You paid for this. And I said, I did not do it for money. I don't want no one to give me money. I didn't ask anybody for money. I did it out of love because my dad asked me to do it. So right now the communication is just like hit and miss. Like I'll talk to her when I have to. Like recently I saw her on Sunday. She came over and she was like, did I get any mail here? I'm like, no, I don't live here. And I'm like, no, mom, you didn't get any mail. And I said, why? What were you expecting? She said, well, the insurance company said they sent a check here. And I'm like, what insurance company? She's like, well, Allstate. And I had inadvertently had paid because the car insurance was due right after my dad had died. And I had paid it twice, not knowing I had paid it twice because I was just so crushed. And I was just trying to get everything done and plan for my dad's celebration of life. Actually, that's another story. Oh, my gosh. trying to get everything done. And I said, mom, you know, I paid it twice and that check was made out to me because I paid it. Oh, okay. Technically that's not true. So I mean, she might hear this, but, the first time the check came, it wasn't her name. I contact the insurance agent. I'm like, hey, I paid for that. And they're like, well, if we resend it, we're going to have to make it out to both of you guys. I said, that's fine. So they canceled the check. They resent it to me. My brother happens to come over the next week. I'm like, hey, I need a favor. I know, you know, mom's signature. I need to sign her name. And he's like, give me $20 for gas. I'll do it. I'm like, no problem. Here's $20. He signed it. I signed it. I put it. And I told her like, mom, I inadvertently paid it twice. So that's the only time my mom ever wants to reach out is for money.
Money. It's very interesting with the similarities with my mother too. It's in their language, it's so worldly. It's like they're doing all this worldly stuff. My mother was all about money, all about money. And the same way of, you never helped me. You never done this anything for me. Rule me, rule me. I would even, when I was out being Jehovah's Witness, I would give her $500 a month for whatever she wanted. Because she would contact me, I need this, I need that. But she asked me for less. And I'm like, if you contacted me too so much, I'm just going to give you a round number, 500. Then anything else you need that you didn't feel like you need to ask me for, you can have. And of course, that number wanted to be more. And I said, I couldn't afford more. Then because of that, I hated her. I don't like her. I can give her more money. And at some point I said, do you actually want money from a worldly person? Because how do you know I earned that money? I could have been a prostitute, a stripper. It's sinful money. Why do you need the money from a worldly person? And of course they don't have an answer for that, but it's just money. And it's funny how you bring something up to them as a Jehovah's Witness. They avoid that question because they know it's true. And then they say, well, I'm the Jehovah's Witness one. Like your mom said, don't tell me how to be a Jehovah's Witness because you're not Jehovah's Witness. Well, I was Jehovah's Witness and I know the rules. I'm not Jehovah's Witness. Then why are you talking to me and why you need money from me? And why do you want to have lengthy conversations? So those are some of the reasons why I block her, because I was tired of being blamed. Whenever I talked to her, whatever I did, she would blame me for things. And I haven't seen her. I saw her once, I think 2007. But let's say in 20 years, I only probably seen her that one time because one of my sister got married. So that's when I saw her. You mentioned you did therapy and I'm glad you brought it up because that's one of the questions that I like to ask people. And I'm not sure how to bring it up because for some people mentioning therapy has this stigma. If you bring it up, some people might get offended. So I'm glad you brought it up. Because I wanted to ask you, have you sought therapy for your Jehovah's Witness traumatic experiences or your life experience? Or would you even call it traumatic? Like And then you mentioned you did therapy. So if I may ask, is the therapy related to your experience being Jehovah's Witness or overall your life?
In the past, it has. Right now, I'm getting grief therapy. But witnesses do come up in my therapy, because I sometimes will play over the conversations I've had with my mother in the past few months since my father died, by making sure that I worded things correctly without trying to not only trigger myself, but trigger my mother and being spiteful. So yes, it does come up.
How are you coping with the aftermath in your current life, not being Jehovah's Witness? Do you feel like there's a wake? Is there still a wake there, or there's none? Like, how are you coping? Your post Jehovah's Witness experience?
There's still bits and pieces that are still triggering. Because as you say, we're so used to not celebrating birthdays or Christmas or holidays. I'm still used to not doing that. And so that's still a part of my life, because I'm so used to it. Yet I kind of do it on the other, and I do it for my daughter. And then when I do it, sometimes I think I'm doing something bad. Mm. So I have to remind myself, it's okay. You're not going to get in trouble. Jehovah's Witnesses still play a part in my life today, but I don't let it affect me. I try to talk it over with my boyfriend, and I try to always tell him, because we'll say something and I'm like, you don't understand. I'm like, you say you understand, but you were never a witness. So until you I could tell you all the stories, but until you actually grew up as a witness, you never understand. And I said, even some other witnesses wouldn't understand, because this is my own experience.
Right. There's probably other traumas that I don't know of. However, when I have nightmares, I usually have two nightmares, actually three. My nightmares, one of them is about things I watch on television. Someone would attack me on the street, like street gangs or whatever. But the other two nightmares I have is often my mother abusing me physically. And the second one is being late for a Kingdom Hall meeting. And when I get there, being judged, like they make you stand up in that little room and then you get shunned. Like, what's that word? You know what they do to you?
They shun you.
Right. Yeah. So
they disassociate you. That's what the word is.
Yeah, disassociate. And those are my three nightmares. And I've done my best to, whenever those things, in the past, I had no power over those nightmares. They would happen and I would have a bad night. But now, whenever they're happening, I just have to remind myself subconsciously, it's a dream and I have the power because it's not real. And then I will wake myself up. But I often feel angry that I even have those dreams, because I hate those dreams. Because it's basically something that did happen in real life, and it really sucks, especially the abuse by my mother. If your former Jehovah's Witness self was there, what would you tell her?
Hang in there. I'll get better once you turn 18.
Yeah, so true. Because when we are in the thick of it, if that's the word, we're often thinking that's the last day and that's all we have. And it's not going to get better, but it does get better, definitely. And I'm very grateful that you share your experiences with me and with us. And although we have a lot of similarities with our motherhood, if I would say, not motherhood, our mother experience, if that's the word, and with the physical abuse, but that's where it stopped for me. And it's very interesting hearing more stories, because the only, let's say if my mother never abused me physically and mentally, if my dad never abused me verbally, I think I would be one of the rare Jehovah's Witnesses who had like a clean slate of just being in bliss. And I think, yeah, so that's the only thing I can say about being Jehovah's Witness. And I think this is why when I left, it was not entirely because I started thinking things, but it wasn't because I was thinking and making researches and then finding truth and this and that. It wasn't even that. And it wasn't even because I stumbled. I did something bad afterwards, but I did it. And I was just like, okay, I did this. What's the point of going back and put my legs between my tail between my legs and crawl and ask for forgiveness and being shunned for years? Because if you have sex outside of marriage, how many prison sentences is that? Like 3 years? Like, what's the point? So I just changed my number and stopped going. And so I've heard a lot of different experiences that were very, I would call, very abusive, either with parents or even the congregation. And that's the abuse in the congregation actually shocked me, because I did not experience those. And I was pretty shocked to know those exist.
I wasn't shocked at all.
Yeah. And it's very interesting. A lot of people say what you said, especially reading things on the groups and talking to people. And I'm thinking maybe because I was a man, maybe because I had a young mind, or I was so blind. Maybe
different. It could have been a combination of all of them.
Yeah. Definitely, because I hear a lot of more abuse stories from women too. Yeah,
because we need those two witnesses.
Mm-hmm. And then they tell you to not speak and say anything. Wow. Uh-huh. Well, Cindy, thank you so much for this time, and I appreciate it.
Well, if you have more questions, I have more stories.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure, definitely.
Let me know. I have more stories. I had tons more stories, like of my growing up as a witness, because that is just like literally like 3%. It's like 3% of like the what I experienced. Like there is just so much I could talk. Like I had to like cut it down for like what my mom is doing to me now. Mm-hmm. And it's just like we are, I'm not gonna lie, we are fearful to be evicted out of this house.
Oh wow, wow.
So when I tell people my story, they're like, oh my god, you should write a book. Because I'm like, I just told you like 5% of like,
yeah,
my homeless, being homeless adventure, you know, more than once. Yeah, you know?
right. Yeah,
you know, dropping out of high school and then going back to school. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a whole nother story in itself, you know. Because right. I don't know if you were taught to drop out of high school. We were. They were like, oh, you don't need to go to school, Armageddon's around the corner,
you know. So I hear that a lot. Well, I know about college, but I did not know about high school, because I was reading stories how a lot of people dropped out of high school. And funny thing is, I guess Jehovah's Witness, I thought it was like McDonald's, as in you get the same burger in every store. Apparently not.
No, it's not. Like, no, if I'd have said like, hey, because I couldn't say I want to be a nurse or a doctor, because like, we're not going to need those when, right, when we're resurrected. We're going to need plumbers, we're going to need builders, anything to, like, if I would have said that, oh yeah, that all day long. But, you know, I didn't want to, I didn't even know what I wanted to do as a kid, you know. And it's kind of funny, you know, I'm still learning my way. I think, what is one positive thing that you learned from the witnesses? Mm. And I can say actually public speaking. So I actually do a lot of public speaking in my, I work for the government. Can't say what I do. Yeah. I could, but yeah, you know, yeah, once I tell someone I do, they have like a million questions. Cause it's it's not that secretive, but
right,
it's public speaking. And yep, that is the one thing that I actually took, you know, going to door to door, doing the talks. That is the one thing. Yeah. That is the one thing that I can take positive that I learned from the witnesses that I utilize in my work experience almost on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And with that public speaking comes the confidence. And I've experienced through people who are, is there a better term than calling people worldly? What should I call them?
I don't, for us, that's all we know them as worldly, because they're in the world and we're in this bubble.
Okay, so I guess I'll call them worldly until I find a better word. So all these worldly people, all my life, people call me arrogant. And I'm very self-critical and I like to make sure I grow. And I question myself, not as in doubt, but as in, I wanna make sure I'm doing right by myself and by others. So when people call me arrogant, I never felt that in my bone or seen it anywhere. And I realize it's because I'm so sure of myself. When I speak, I'm sure of myself. When I do something, I'm sure of it. And it's my confidence or my audacity of doing something. People call that as arrogant.
You're just comfortable.
Right. And I would explain people that and they don't understand why. I'll just speak. If I see a group of people, I'll just march to them and talk to them. I'll just ask questions. I'll just introduce myself and I'll just do this and do that. And if something needs to be leading, I will be the leader. But if there's another leader there already, I would follow and I can do both. And people who wants to get to know me more, they don't get that. They think I'm just some arrogant person who wants to take over the world. And as a Jehovah's Witness, not me personally, but as a group, we wanted to take over the world. But as an individual who is in the world now, I don't care for any of that. So it's very interesting. Yes, definitely one thing. And with the principal, I try to ask different ex-JWs different questions. I ask someone else about principles of Jehovah's Witnesses. And I'm not religious. And I don't want to say I'm atheist either. And I don't want to say I'm an agnostic and all any of these words. I like to say, I don't give a what. I'm just living my life. I'm living my best life. And I keep some principles, and I don't think those principles are religious. Those principles are just life. I don't like to say I am with a lot of things, but if I would say I am something, I would say it. But people who know me, they tend to ask me if I'm Buddhist or Hindu. And I would say I practice Buddhism, but I don't tell people I am, because one thing I've learned is, as you mentioned, you went from one group to another. I don't want to belong in something and keep myself in a box and say I am. Yeah. If anything, in my text messages or when my signature, I say I am peace, I am love, and I am Zen. Those things, I do not mind being in a box for those things. But I am a Buddhist, I would say no. I practice Buddhism because I want to give myself freedom to do something else if I choose to.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have this
bubble. Yeah. Yeah. Joining my second cult, that's another story. So
how are you doing it? Is your courage and your strength. And unfortunately, those things did happen. However, they built you up, because you know that quote, that cliche that says God doesn't give you a thing that He doesn't know
you can't handle.
Yeah, kind of a thing. Let's say if the word God is not a religion thing or your universe, I think that quote is legit, like in a non-religious way. Because if you are able to do all these things, there's a word I learned about coincidence. I learned from my guru, Sadhguru. He says how the word coincidence means coincide. It's part of the story. It's supposed to happen. It's part of the track. But coincidence has changed its meaning. But those things do happen to you. Like in hindsight, we see, oh, it happened and I'm glad it happened, or I'm glad something did not happen. And I'm glad, and something did happen, I'm not glad about it, but it happened, I'm here now, kind of a thing. We can, not never, but I think most people don't see the 2020 vision. the bigger picture, because you are in the photo, and until that photo is, this chapter is done, and then the photo is printed, now you're looking at the photo and be like, oh, now you've seen the details, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I look at a lot of photos when I was Jehovah's Witness. And when that was happening, of course, I thought it was what was happening. But when I'm looking at those photos and I'm seeing different things, oh, wow, yeah. So at least in my personal life, I cannot speak for you, obviously. And I didn't, granted, I did not have a crazy happening life, but I had like enough things that made me who I am today. And I am grateful for every single one of them, because I love myself so much. People call me arrogant, and I don't even care if they call me that, because if I don't love myself, who's going to love me?
Exactly.
So yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have to get into the conventions and everything, because those are another stories. When there's, you know, because as women, that's how we find our husbands. So I hope we could talk soon. So you just let me know.
Juicy, juicy. Oh, yes, yeah. Definitely. So thank you very much, Cindy, for talking to us today and telling us your story of strength and bravery. And I'm very glad you're here with us today. And I'm sure you're proud of yourself for going through all of the things that you went through. And you're still here today, regardless of what Jehovah's Witnesses think of you and what your mother think of you. Because I didn't live your life, obviously, but there's similarities where my mother was, as I mentioned, she had that tongue. She would say, if you leave the house, you're going to have AIDS and you'll die, and I'll spit on your grave and I'll laugh when I'm on the road to paradise. And then you will crawl back with your tail between your legs, and the story goes on. And I'm here, and I have no disease. Thank God, or thank the universe, think whatever. And I'm grateful for that. And yeah, this has been a great deep conversation. And thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing that with other people. I think it's very important to share our stories, because it helps someone else have the strength to tell their own story. And even if they don't tell their own story, it tells someone that they're not alone. And it helps them secretly. Because funny thing is, when I post those ads on Facebook, you know how many people, this is why I have the fourth option to be anonymous, how many people are still in there and they're afraid for their lives. And that's crazy. And so, and that tells me I need to have this more to give people a voice, or a voice for other people to hear, to be inspired for.
It's not crazy, because they don't want to be disassociated from their families. And that's when you're cut off, you're treated as dead. So it does not surprise me that people want to be anonymous. But yeah. I the only one who's still lifted is my mother. I mean, I know her sisters and some of my cousins are still in it, but I rarely talk to them, and they don't even live in the same state. So
Right.
So I'm glad that you're offer this platform for other people to talk about their experience and growing up. And then I look forward to talking to you again. So,
yeah, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. I'll see you next time. I'm excited for next time. Bye-bye now.
Bye.